webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution. And now, here's Glenn Klein online.
Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's Hump Day, Wednesday, January 12, 2011. The only January 12, 2011 in the history of humanity. Welcome in on this midweek edition of the Gospel Revolution webcast. Glad to have you along wherever you are logging on to from, whether it be live around the world or on the archive. We are just happy to have you with us. If you are listening live and it's 9 o'clock on the east coast of the United States, that is your cue to call us at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260 is Glenn Klein Online toll-free number in the United States and Canada. If you're listening in all the other 200-plus nations of the world, you can call us locally. We'd love to hear from you if you happen to be listening live at 813-425-5773. 813-425-5773. And as always, you can email us 24/7 at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Webcast@gospelrevolution.com. That's the number one way to contact us, folks. And we want to hear from you and get your comments. And we definitely want to hear and get the comments from the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution from Houston, Texas, the one and only Michael Williams. Michael.
Good evening, Glenn.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm well. I couldn't have said that every day this week, but I can today.
Are you feeling nice better now?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Just wintertime. I hate to complain about wintertime maladies when this is hardly considered to be winter compared to some of the revolutionaries that are listening at points north of here. We had a very chilly day in Houston. It was only about 50 degrees and windy, and it's goodness, it's supposed to get down to near freezing tonight. So it's cold in Houston.
Yeah, not a lot of complaints. In fact, I can't complain at all because I reside in the only state in the United States of America that does not have snow on the ground right now, including California and Hawaii. Florida is the only state in the U.S. of A. without snow on the ground. So I am not complaining
at all.
So we have lots to talk about tonight, folks. We've got some emails we want to get to, but we do want to hear from you. Sean is waiting in the studio at 1-800-436-3260 to take your calls. We know that people listen live. Most people listen on the archive, but it seems like it takes that first person who is listening live to call to get the ball rolling. This is not unusual for any radio show, and it's certainly not unusual for us. So we want to hear from you if anything's on your heart, if you just want to say hello, if you have any questions. 1-800-436-3260. We've got a specific topic to talk about, as we do usually. We're going to talk about David Dwyer's email from Brisbane, Australia, and they have been going through it in a big way. I saw a video tonight from Brisbane of the flooding that has been occurring in that city. It's the third largest city in Australia, and they have just been devastated by the floods over the last 90 days or so. And prior to the webcast, Michael, I was watching the memorial service in Tucson that President Obama and Mrs. Obama are at the University of Arizona for the victims of the mass murder that occurred outside a Safeway grocery store. Ironic name, I thought, for the name of the grocery store that took place at in Tucson, the Safeway. And I wept as I heard Governor Jan Brewer speak and President Obama speak. Why do I cry for situations like this when there is constant suffering going on the planet that I'm very aware of, and yet these media-focused things that are tragic nonetheless sometimes bring out such emotion? Where does that come from?
You're asking me?
Well, you're the only one that's on the line beside me, brother.
I thought you were about to answer your own question. for me, I mean, it is anything connected to our nation and its safety. Any one of our public servants, the judge whose life was taken, I know that everyone's life that was taken there was a tragedy, but it would have been a tragedy for the families personally. And in these cases, these are tragedies, this assassination and attempted assassination. It hits home. For me, it conjures up my thoughts of when President Kennedy was assassinated, and Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King, and we went through a very tumultuous time in the 60s in just a few short years, and that has been so far behind us for so long. You hate to see you just hate to see our country go through such a thing. That would be mine. I couldn't guess twice about your own, but I would say it would probably be similar.
I think one of the things that hits me, they talked about one of the couples. You heard about the husband that dove over his wife, right, and got shot up and died protecting her, that they actually had been divorced for quite a while, and then later in life came back together, which is something that I can relate to. Obviously, not the exact same way, but on some level. Plus, the little 9-year-old girl that died on January 9th, 2011, when she was born on, she literally was born on,
right,
9/11, 2001. Yeah. And just to hear the heart that she had, and the sense of gratefulness that she had for her life. She'd just been elected to the student council in her school, and a neighbor thought, well, you know what, you just got elected to the student council. This would be cool if you would meet our congresswoman, since you have just been elected to your student government.
Right.
And obviously, you know, you bring somebody to an event like that and they end up getting murdered, there's got to be an incredible amount of soul-searching and guilt. When I was watching this memorial service in Tucson, that I have visited that campus, I visited that town. My brother Jimmy went to the University of Arizona. I know exactly where they're at. There's a lot of religious imagery in these moments, Michael.
Uh-huh.
And they had the Secretary of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, and the Attorney General, Eric Holder, they spoke, but all they did was read the Bible. And they had a Native American up there that conveyed a blessing, a Native American blessing. How important is it as a society to have these religious underpinnings that really, at the end of the day, they may help us through the moment, but in the long term, do they really help us?
Well, I think that during those moments, I don't think they're so much religious as they are ritual, and tradition. And I think we misplace where our ritual and our tradition should be, but nonetheless, it is ritual and tradition are very important, and they always crop up in times like this. We have made tradition and ritual out of religion, and therefore that's what comes up during these times. You will see many other rituals and traditions that come up that are non-religious as this entire thing unfolds, you know, with the death of the judge, and you're going to see displays of the flag and certain rituals there. I think that they are very healthy. I do believe, though, that that our religious traditions, you know, we could place a lot of emphasis on tradition and ritual in daily life that has nothing to do with religion, and get a whole lot more out of it than what we do as far as religion is concerned, because, as you said, in the long term, the religious ritual does bring its baggage along. It is comforting at the moment. And you've got to understand, though, that any ritual and tradition is comforting in a moment that is trying. It doesn't make any difference whether I agree with it or not. I would never go through any of the Catholic ritual for funerals or especially during funerals, since we're talking about tragedies and things like that, and the incense, I recoil at it. However, I wouldn't deny someone else the value of that ritual. There's something comforting about it. Ritual and tradition are valuable. I think they belong more in our daily lives with our children and our families, and having traditions and rituals that we go through that provide a sense of safety. And then during difficult times, we rely on those traditions and to maintain a sense of stability when things have gone awry. Excuse me. Like you said, those religious ones do carry along many connotations to them, which, you know, you could never address at this point as to the extent of that. And many people, they're not going to mean a thing to except just tradition and ritual, and that's going to be it. So it is a difficult thing, but we do rely on these things, and rightfully so. Whether they are religious or not is another story altogether.
Well, there's a lot of soul searching and searching for answers when anything like this happens. But before I do want to get into that, because I think that is one of our missions, is examining how we human beings relate with each other, relate to God, relate to tragedy, relate to blessing, and how that we walk through these things with a spiritual mindset, better defined as a vital, logical, mental disposition. Having said that, what is it, Michael, about the human heart that needs these rituals, that needs this pattern of going through things. That's on a general sense, and more specifically on these things that now that we're able to watch as though we're there, is you think it is easier for people who suffer loss and tragedy in a public way, that get massive public support, that have the frickin' president of the United States show up to your memorial service, where literally multiple hundreds of millions, if not billions of people, are suffering the kind of loss that was experienced in Tucson on Saturday, that's being experienced right now in Australia, that's being experienced all over the world, within just a few kilometers or miles of people that are listening to us right now. Do you think that when your suffering's public and there's more public support, that it's easier to get through that somehow, at least initially?
Yes, and initially is the and at the time is exactly how I was going to respond to that, because you know, no matter how much public support you have, there's certainly the atmosphere that is generated by a multitude and an outpouring and an entire nation, of course. But all of these people, regardless of who they are, you know, all of the people who died in this tragedy, their families are going to have to go home, and you know, there's going to be time by themselves, and no amount of how many times they remember that the president was there is going to make those times easier. It certainly made the moment more doable, without a doubt, I would think. But those are things that help for the moment. But in the long run, these folks aren't going to be any different in dealing with their tragedies than anyone else, I suppose. Tragedy, loss is loss, and an affected heart is an affected heart. And the heart is going to have to go through its process, regardless of how much support is around or is absent. The heart's still going to have to go through whatever process that individual has to go through to come back to a place of wholeness again.
You know, I wonder if the people that do have this is, I have never seen a study on it. This would be an interesting study. I wonder if the people that do suffer in a public way, who do have all this public affirmation initially, actually have a harder time of it because they have all this massive attention initially, and then people get back to their lives and it just goes away.
Absolutely. I think that's very true, that that it can, you know, it can actually, in phases of it, it can in the long term compound it, because you're almost not living in reality when all of the people are there and the outpouring is there. And at some point, you know, there's alone time. There comes a point when you've got to deal with this by yourself, with whatever size group of friends, and even no matter how large your support group is, in the long term, in the long run, the effect that is on the heart is going to have to be worked out privately, personally, and alone. Not that we would pursue to leave people alone during this time. Our goal is always to comfort and support and do that in whatever way that we can, and people always appreciate that. But I think anybody who's been through these things know that those things are at best a temporary distraction from the whole process, for sure.
So we have one of the people that died in the shootings in Tucson on Saturday was a U.S. federal judge that was appointed by George H.W. Bush. He's been a judge for 40 years. And I learned tonight that here's a guy that went to mass every single day and went to the meeting at the Safeway with Congresswoman Giffords, who was apparently the target of this assassination attempt. Apparently, him going to mass every single day did not help him at that moment.
Certainly didn't prevent the tragedy. I don't know how much going to mass helped him in his daily conscience or how it helped him navigate life. Nobody's belief system can stop a tragedy. That's my persuasion. There's nothing that I teach that would have led to a different outcome. It's just you turn right or left at Oak Street. You know, it's decisions, and decisions compound upon themselves, and multiple things can go right to make an absolutely incredible day, and multiple things can go wrong all at once to lead to such absolute tragedy as far as who is where and why they were there. And I think that the major thing that I always square on in any of these things in trying to think my way through them is that I just hope that those involved do not have to deal with issues of guilt, because even the person who encouraged the young girl to go there, they did nothing wrong. There was they weren't misguided. There was nothing. They did not cost her life. This is a tragedy.
Right, Michael. But let's leave that aside. I mean, that is somewhat self-evident, even though it's a very human emotion to, when you end up even innocently putting somebody in harm's way.
Of course.
That's an obvious thing. But what about the whole concept of this was their time to go? This was God's moment. This was God's will. What does Mike Williams say to the people around the globe that are listening right now that are not just wondering about situations, obviously, like this public one, or the people that are suffering all over the planet right now, David Dwyer, who's suffering in Brisbane, Australia, with the flood? I mean, there's so much suffering. Where is God in all this as far as the understanding of the gospel?
Well, there's a time to be born. It doesn't say there's a certain time to be born. There's a time to die. It doesn't say there's a certain time to die. I think that's what people extrapolate from that. And I just don't believe that it's true at all. There's culminations of events. I mean, if the issue, our time to die, actually were a truth, then if people enjoyed smoking cigarettes, let's let them smoke, you know. And if they enjoy Russian roulette and pointing the gun at each other's heads, why do we get upset about those things and call them such heinous crimes? Why do we call crimes it's like the horrible tragedy of the man who broke in and slaughtered this family, where the husband survived and his wife and two daughters were brutally killed and set on fire.
Front of him.
Yes, absolutely, in front of him, and then to equate.
after they had been raped.
Yes, and to try to equate that this was their time to die, I think it's we're desperate to to resolve tragedy for sure. But let me assure you that there one of the most long-term devastating consequences in tragedy is to try to equate into that this was their time to die, whether it was a car accident, an assassination, a murder, cancer, a car accident. It's another one of those things that our actions prove we don't believe it. Why do we as a society, why are we against texting and driving if everybody has a time to die? And then, of course, there's those that we deem to be untimely deaths, that this just was not their time. And then, of course, you've got to go into a whole nother realm of thinking. But for the most part, anyone who thinks in those terms, they believe that everybody, when they died, it had to be their time to go. And
right.
I think it is just an extension of the mental illness that Christianity, in particular, that I know about. I don't know about all the religions of the world, but I think that the fallacy that it's just their time to go is one of the extensions of the mental illness of Christianity.
Right. Well, I'm going to get more into this, folks, after the break, but before we go to the break, we want to go to actually Arizona in the United States, of Huachuca City, to be specific. Our dear sister Billy Thompson has called in. Billy, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing just fine. How are you?
Good.
Hi, Billy.
We are doing wonderfully. We're sifting through this stuff as we always do.
Right. Good. I just called because, you know, you were talking about tragedies and how they affect people, what they think, what they say to you. Because I've had two experiences with that. My husband was a deputy sheriff, and he was shot in 1991, and then he was killed in a car accident in 1994. And, of course, he, being a deputy sheriff from a small area, everyone knew who he was, and then statewide he was very popular too. A lot of people knew him. So if you wanted to ask me some questions about my feelings on this, I'll try and help out.
Well, I appreciate that. Obviously, 94, it's over 16 years ago now, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And how much, as the gospel has had a greater impact on your life, has that changed your perspective on it, or has it changed it at all?
In 91, we were just kind of breaking the ice on the gospel of peace and grace. So I had just enough experience with that it hasn't changed it too much more. It certainly enlarged my understanding, but basically it stayed, the same. Because I had a good grounding. You know, I went to one of Michael's seminars. So that got me started. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were already gone by then, so it didn't make any difference. So. Well, honestly, you know, I really appreciate this because here's the thing. See, a lot of times, Billy, people get the misconception that you have to understand all of the intricacies and of the things that you and I and Glenn and all of us have learned over the last few years, and we've learned loads beyond where we were in 91. But the I think that sometimes we get so impacted every time we learn something that is an extension. I think we forget that all we're doing is continuing in our understanding of the gospel of grace and the gospel of peace. And regardless of where we were, no, regardless of how much more we have learned, its impact when we first heard it is virtually the same as it is today. It's just we are threading through things that are bringing greater clarification. And but this really is, I mean, your call is delightful, and but it is true. Just that basic understanding of grace and peace. You went through those things knowing that this was not a punishment from God, knowing that nobody sinned that caused these incidents to happen, that eventually the accident took your husband's life. That
exactly.
You know, so you were already devoid of all of the religious pulls into the guilt and the judgment thing.
That's right. Exactly right. And I think one of the worst things that happened to me at that time was people coming up to me and saying that it was just his time.
Wow.
And
so that was the hardest thing for you. that was hard for you to hear people say that.
Right. Right. Yeah. I didn't
what
want to
What was it, Billy? What else was hard to hear?
That people were praying for me. And
yeah.
They were praying for my husband, and it was just the will of God. And
yeah.
You know, it was his time. That sort of thing.
What were the things that were nice to hear or good to hear?
Actually, just the good things about my husband. You know, the kind of man he was, the kind of man he turned into. That's what I wanted to hear. You know, more than anything.
Now, Bill, you said that your husband was a public figure, and he was well known in the county and or even around the state. And so you probably got more attention than the average person who is suffering a loss of a dear loved one, a spouse or a child.
Right.
As time went on, did that attention go away? And how were you able to cope with that immediate tension lessening over time?
I would say that was probably the hardest thing to cope with. I didn't want them to forget who my husband was.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that's normal. You don't want them to disappear altogether. Because, you know, I like to keep him alive in my heart, so I want to hear about him. I want to hear the stories. Because as time has gone by and my memory is starting to fade, I miss hearing about him because I just don't, there's a lot I don't remember about him.
Yeah.
And I think that was the hardest part of the whole thing.
How are you doing with it now, all these years later?
Oh, I'm fine. I still get together, you know, with my kids and stuff, and we reminisce about their dad. But, you know, the more that I've learned about the gospel of grace and peace, you know, I depend less and less on his memories and just knowing, you know, that he's fine. We're all going to be fine. So...
It's going to be here pretty quick, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I think so. I'm hoping so anyway.
You know,
well, we know it is. I mean, here's the most. I was thinking about this just the other day, Michael. Here's what happened. I was listening to the first convention CDs from 2008. Which started a day after President Obama was elected to office. And now, literally, they're gearing up for the 2012 elections, his first term is, I mean, it's halfway over already. And it literally, it literally seems like yesterday that the guy was elected, and pretty soon, his time in office, whether it be 4 or 8 years, is going to be over, and we're going to be on to the next guy. This stuff, I mean, I know people say, Michael, that this happens more when you get older, but as you do get older, time just is fleeting. I mean, it just goes by so fast.
Yeah, and Billy, I want to follow up on this because you made an incredibly profound statement that I don't want this to slip by here. You said the more that you understand the gospel of grace and the gospel of peace, the less you depend on his memory to keep you going.
Yeah.
That is profound.
Mm-hmm.
Now, within those memories, memories is what people cling to because they can't move on. As long as you are holding certain things in a constant memory, in many cases, it keeps you in somewhat of a state of grief. Somewhat a state of feeling the loss constantly until you finally just let it all go. And I think that it was very amazing. I've gone through my own personal family tragedy that didn't have to do with death, but certainly loss of several family members. And you really enlightened me here when you said that. I don't live in memories. I don't live there. I don't know that I was able to identify that until you said that, Billy. And I think that you are exactly correct in that the gospel allows you to let go of the memories because the memories in and of themselves can hold you in grief. Can hold you in that sense of loss, and I don't go around living in memories of the members of my family that I lost 6 years ago. I don't live in those memories, and that's awesome. Thank you. You've given me something very valuable tonight.
Well, great. I'm glad I did. And you know, sometimes I think that church and society expects us to hold on to those memories like that.
Yeah, almost memorialize the entire thing, you know, and that we are somehow not caring and loving if we don't constantly hold these things in memory. I tell you, you're correct, because the thing we need to hold in memory is the gospel. We do need to remember. Goodness gracious, 30 years ago, I did an entire teaching on the mental exercise of remembering and just taking the word to remember, and that you literally put something back together and live that experience again by remember. You take the members of a situation, like members of a body, you attach them all together and you've got the whole thing right there again. And you can have alive in your heart whatever you are remembering, but if it's something that's no longer there, we need to let it go. And we've got to move on. But the thing that we don't ever need to stop remembering is the gospel, and we need to remember it because it is active and alive today. It's not like something, the gospel is not something we lost. The gospel is something we found or that found us. And to hold it in remembrance is the power that it, the gospel's power to work in our soul in the degree that it can is, I think, really attached to the consistency that we have in bringing it into remembrance and rehashing it and restoring it. Obviously, you're on the phone with us tonight and on the webcast. tonight because you remember the gospel. You go through this, you reattach yourself, your mind to it on a constant basis. And in doing so, it has taken away the constant remembrance of something that you lost. Instead,
That's
you remember
so true.
What you got.
Yeah, I like the way you explain that. Remember. I'm going to have to remember remembering.
Hey, Billy, thank you very, very much for picking up the phone. You've touched and impacted a lot of lives tonight around the planet.
You sure have,
and, yeah, no doubt. So thanks for doing that, all right?
Love you.
All right, well, thank you so much. Love you guys.
You too,
love,
Billy.
Love you too, Billy. There's
right.
Billy Thompson.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye.
There's Billy Thompson. That was not planned, folks, as they memorialized and remembered the dead and the wounded in Arizona tonight. That is a profound insight about the gospel of grace and peace being the
yeah.
thing to have preeminence as opposed to two memories. And we're going to talk more about that and take your calls at 1-800-436-3260. The number's available to you now at 1-800. Call us up there, 1-800-436-3260. We'll be back in 1 minute right here. The Gospel Revolution Radio Network.
Because of what the world did. The world was going to hell because of what somebody else did. The preaching of the gospel makes no one righteous. It reveals the righteousness that you already have. The reason the blood of Christ only covers transgressions under the First Testament is because that's the only place where transgression existed. Everyone has been made righteous. But you've got righteousness you didn't ask for, righteousness you didn't even believe for. You might say, well, I'm an atheist. Well, welcome. You're an atheist that's on your way to heaven. This is clear, sound doctrine in every Bible school that is on the face of this planet that teaches any form of Christianity.
The statements you just heard are from the Northern Midwest Conference in the teaching series, Spiritual Understanding, the Knowledge of God. James Pep Washburn writes, tonight was probably the most powerful presentation of the real gospel that I have ever heard. This is no exaggeration. The guy was absolutely firing on all cylinders tonight. He was in afterburner mode. No loose ends. Amazing. This 3-CD series is available for $24 plus shipping and handling, or in a downloadable audiobook for $12. Order your copy of the CDs or download at gospelrevolution.com today.
Welcome back to this very special Gospel Revolution webcast. Glenn Klein online, Michael Williams, Gospel Revolution Wednesday. That line is available to you folks at 800-436-3260. Love to hear your comments, especially in the wake of Billy Thompson's phone call. 800-436-3260. If you're listening outside the U.S. or Canada, and it's about 9:45 on the East Coast, you can call us, too. We'd love to hear from you at 813-425-5773. That's the direct line. Toll-free doesn't work outside the U.S. or Canada, but you can call us at 813-425-5773. We've been talking about loss tonight. We've been talking about suffering. We've been talking about the human condition. And Michael, Billy said that once the gospel of grace and peace came into her life, she didn't have to rely on the memories to get her through.
Powerful.
It's very powerful. And you have said that the human heart, the human soul, has been designed to endure loss, to suffer loss. And it apparently is true, because, I mean, if there's anything that humanity has in common besides our understanding of our unity and our righteousness in God through Christ, that's something that we understand. That is by the faith of Christ. That is by our understanding of the gospel. that is not observable. That is not quantifiable. That is our understanding, our interpretation, our prejudice, if you will. It's not our prejudgment. It's our judgment after the fact, actually. But if there's anything that's observable, is that all humanity suffers. You never go through life without tragedy, without suffering, without loss. It's just there's nobody who has that experience unless you die so young that you're not even conscious of life. Once you're conscious, you're going to suffer on some level. We all have that in common. And we survive it. Humanity continues to go on. The planet continues to progress. But it is our strong sense that the gospel, this understanding of our righteousness and our perfection in God and our oneness with God and our oneness with each other and our oneness with ourselves, and the meditation of that and the contemplation of that and hearing from Billy Thompson about that and her experience, that somehow that can bolster the process of suffering loss and overcoming it and withstanding it. Why is that?
Well, I'm still mulling over her comment. It's just there's so much there. It bears repeating time after time. I mean, that the more that she understood grace and peace, the less she needed the memory to get her through. There's so much wrapped up in that. I mean, do you realize the confidence you have to have in what you're saying? To love somebody as much as she did her husband, obviously, and many other people.
Much as she probably loves him right now.
Absolutely. And to be able to say that letting go of his memory as far as needing it to survive was a part of her recovery, I have never heard anybody admit that, Glenn. I never have.
Is it a question of her letting go of his memory, or, as we've noted on many an occasion, the power of God, the gospel, supplanting that memory?
Absolutely,
in other words,
of course.
I don't know that you would necessarily, we might have to get Billy back on the phone. I don't know if you make a conscious effort to let go of the memory, or is that stealthy effect of the gospel that just supplants your memory with the solidity of your place and everybody and your husband's place or whoever's place in Christ because of the gospel?
Absolutely. I think we can answer that for Billy beyond the shadow of a doubt, that it is just the effect of the gospel itself. These are not conscious decisions that someone makes. The process, gospel-involved process through tragedy, has been one of the most wonderful, observable things that I have ever experienced in my life, as far as watching and seeing what happens to me and to my way of thinking. And I think the reason that this touched me personally so deeply from what Billy said is that this has happened to me, and I didn't recognize it the way Billy recognized it. But it's true. It's absolutely true. You know, people who have a hard time moving on, they want to hold on to the memories. They want to rehash and relive the memories. Not that there's anything wrong with the memory. But when a memory is keeping you from living and keeping you from healing, then it's time that something give you the power to let go of that memory, because I think a lot of it is, and the way that the gospel, I think you put it very good, Glenn, the reason the gospel can navigate that for you and release it for you, and you give the memory permission to move on, is because the letting the memory go, as far as constantly rehashing it and remembering it all the time, you are not lessening the respect and the admiration and the love you have for the person that you're letting go of those memories of. Like you said, the gospel has defined them, their place, their state, who they are, what they are, and so we are able to allow them to literally to pass on.
And it's not just the loved ones. This is all about our loss of innocence, loss of protection. I mean, this is all the crapola that comes down the pike towards our life. And we want to hold on to that stuff because we find our identity in our suffering and in our accomplishments. Or we could say it this way, folks. We find our sense of identity in the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and it's not advisable from day one. This is Glenn Klein Online. If we have to go overtime, we're going to, but we're happy to welcome on our dear brother from beautiful Daytona. Mike Kolb is online with us. We're so happy you called back. Mike!
Que pasa, senor?
Muy bien, y tú?
Hey, Mike.
Sorry, that's all the Spanish I know.
Yeah, well, I broke out the weep. Yeah, I need to.
How are you all?
We're doing great, man. Have you been listening since the start, or did you hear Billy Thompson?
Not since the start, no. I kind of cut in halfway, and then it was an interesting topic, so I thought I'd call in and just share my experience with experience, strength, and hope. So anyway.
Yeah, let's hear it.
It was, because you're talking about suffering and loss and how the church makes it worse and how the gospel can make it better. That's
yes.
Kind of the gist of, what I got. And I remember back when I was first in the church in a pretty legalistic end times, they used to have Titanic parties, let's get everybody on, off the Titanic before it sinks, that kind of crap.
Right.
And when I was in that nonsense, my brother died. He was killed in the avalanche of all things. Kind of an odd way to go, but he was 21, I think he was 21, 22, and he died in an avalanche. And I remember just being not tormented, but just like on edge and just wondering if he had time to like give his life to the Lord before he died so he was in heaven. And it was just, looking back, it was just silly, but I was in that mess, and that's what people do, and it's just sad.
Yeah. How long ago was that, Mike?
March 1st, 1992.
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, it's a unique way to go, but pretty much everything's a unique way to go, one way or the other. How soon after that did you come to understand the gospel?
Oh, quite a long time. In fact, when you guys were talking, it kind of triggered that memory. I'm like, oh my God, I don't even think that way about my brother anymore. I'm just like,
wow.
I'm not anxious to see him, but I'll see him eventually, And, the gospel just freed me from worrying about if he's in heaven or hell, or I just shudder at the thought that I used to think that way. But
and what ways did the church, looking back on it, because you were still obviously in religious influence, how was that impact? What specific things were said or done or that you can remember that was not helpful?
It's funny. I think the people were actually pretty kind. They didn't say anything, but it was the message. All you could do is listen every Sunday and about, you have to choose Jesus or you're going to hell. And they didn't have to say anything specifically to me. I pretty much got the message and, believed it. unfortunately. And so, yeah, individually, people were fine, but the message was just poison, and it got into my soul, and it was not a pretty thing.
No. You know, I when I first came into Christianity, a very good friend of mine had his roommate drop dead of a heart attack. And this guy was in his early 20s. And my friend, who was his good friend, was his roommate, was, of course, just devastated. He dropped dead of a heart attack in college. And I was so brutal to my friend about this that I told him that his friend, unless something happened between the time that he took his last breath until he died of the heart attack, that he is now burning in hell for eternity. I told him that.
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty harsh. But I did it because that's what I was taught to do, and I believed it because I was taught it. And I wanted my friend to not make the same mistake that his roommate John had made and die of a heart attack or whenever in an avalanche or whenever and go to hell. One of the greatest pleasures that I had in my life after the gospel came in was to tell my friend that his friend John was not in hell and that he had gone to heaven, and how sorry I was and how wrong I was for that understanding, and how much I apologized for that. And it's a heinous thing, man, to carry the judgment of God in your back pocket. And, you know, we've kind of seen it a little bit and we always do when these tragedies happen, whether it be in religious circles or political circles. Michael, people look to make hay and make religious and political gain out of other human beings' tragedies. And it's not good. It's not right. It's not fun.
No, it's it is great cruelty for sure, and of course when the issue is being right and wrong, you're going to have to gravitate that way. I remember many years ago when this first began to not set well with me, and I remember exactly the road I was driving on in Palm Springs, and I had the radio on. And they were talking about an incredible earthquake in India. It was this has been somewhere within 15 to 20 years ago, and I was going past through the religious station. I mean, it was, of course, when I was still listening to those types of things, and they were talking about getting all the missionaries together. And they were talking about how that in tragedy is the time to reach people's hearts.
Right. Kind of like Rahm Emanuel's famous saying when he was the, what the hell was he, chief of staff of President Obama, never let a good crisis go to waste. Same concept.
And so what they were saying, they literally, I couldn't believe that they couldn't hear themselves. The only reason they wanted to get food and help to these people was to take advantage of the tragedy to recruit them into Christianity.
Right.
And I remember hearing that and realizing they couldn't even hear what they were saying. And I think it's one of those little flashpoint moments that I realized that pertaining to the gospel, we got such a huge work when you can say something so offensive and so atrocious, just unbelievably atrocious, and you can't even hear yourself saying it, there's a big job to be done.
You know, that's really a great way to put it, because interestingly enough, those words that Rahm Emanuel spoke came back to him now as he's running for mayor of the city of Chicago, and he heard his own words in light of the tragedy in Tucson, and he went, whoa, 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 that's not what I was talking about. But see, when you're trying to take advantage, for whatever reason, of people suffering, those words come back to haunt you. I don't care what religious persuasion a person has. I don't care what political persuasion. If your heart is not understanding that this is not, quote unquote, the will of God, or as a result of somebody's evil or somebody's unrighteousness, your words are going to come back to haunt you. Actually, if you're lucky to hear your own words. And then you can say, like I said to my buddy, I am so sorry about what I said. That was so wrong. I am so, so sorry. You know what?
Yeah, like,
my friend appreciated that, Mike.
Yeah, and the fact of it is that you're probably not going to get that opportunity. So the issue is, let's just stay away from this stuff altogether. Most likely you're not going to get that opportunity to go back and say how stupid we were. There's no one who's listening to us right now who has been, and I think most of the people who listen to the Gospel Revolution are people who were fairly deeply involved in evangelical Christianity. These are people who had a form of thinking that was quite crystallized, and who probably all of us have inflicted some form of pain, even people with the absolute best of intentions, and even in your situation, like you said, that was just the best of intentions.
But, oh, dude, I wanted to save him from the fiery pit of hell. I mean, you can't have
absolutely.
A better intention than that.
Yeah, absolutely. But all of us know what it's like to say things that are just untoward in the in situations and crises, and oh my gosh, we've heard it, we've done it, and now at least there is a voice in the gospel to be able to address this. I don't know of any other voice that would still include the name of Jesus, that would still include the basic tenets of understanding of who Jesus is and what he did, to where that you could actually address this and address how wrong it is and address exactly why it is so wrong.
Yeah, what's so pernicious about it is you can say these awful, hateful things, but convince yourself that it's out of love. And it's just staggering, actually, now that I think about it. The things that people say and justify it because, oh, I'm loving, and I don't, you know, it's just, it's crazy.
Well, but I mean, if that is the, you know, influence that one is under, and you are convinced of it yourself, you actually would be a hateful person yourself not to bring that up. I mean, see, this is what Michael's talking about. I would say most of the gospel revolutionaries were either, as Michael said, extremely involved or extremely impacted by Christianity and religion. And if you actually think that if people do not accept Christ as the personal Lord and Savior, and you do not take opportunities like that, that where they're raw and they're tender and they're vulnerable, to point that out, you really don't believe it. You really are callous yourself.
Right.
As bizarre and as twisted as that is, and the fact of the matter is that over time, obviously, the gospel comes in and you realize the depth of the depravity of what you were taught and what you taught and what you believed. But what I have found, fellas, is that when people are suffering, the best thing that I can say is just to be in complete and utter agreement with them, especially early on, which is, and I've used this with amazing response and an amazing amount of times, I simply say, that sucks. That sucks. And you'd be amazed at the positive feedback, both face-to-face and whether it be over the phone or over the internet, that when people are, especially when they're initially suffering or when you learn about it, you know what, Michael? It sucks. Bottom line.
Yeah, absolutely.
It freaking sucks. It sucks. Loss and initially sucks balls. I mean, it just sucks.
It's anything that offers an answer in a tragedy. See, when you have an answer in a tragedy, that is undermining the very definition of a tragedy. A tragedy is something that really there is no answers other than just obvious physical answers, but spiritual answers. Offering these spiritual answers at a time like this, there is no comfort. For cancer victims, to tell them how to get healed on a spiritual level, that's just offensive. Now, you may think you're doing good, but the fact of it is that all you're doing is compounding the person's suffering. It doesn't make any difference what it is. Spiritual answers for real tragedies are insults.
Yeah, and you've said this before, Mike, in some of your tapes, but the only salvation for society is that most of the people in church really don't believe that crap that comes from the pulpit. They really don't act on any of it. They just sit and listen and go about their lives, and thank God for that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that sometimes I am very grateful that they don't. And then there's times for the speeding up of the process, I wish they would. I wish they would all talk the way their church talks. I wish they would all say what their church says. I wish they would all act the way their church has taught them to act. I wish they would condemn everybody their church tells them to condemn.
No doubt. You know, one of the reporters that was reporting on the Westboro Baptist Church going to protest at the funerals in Arizona, the so-called reporter said that this is the most unchristian, this was on CNN, the most unchristian behavior that they could possibly imagine. And I thought to myself, honey, that is the most Christian behavior that could be exhibited. That they're doing exactly what those people believe. They just don't have the guts to stand up and say they agree with those people. Except every so often you get a little glimmer into what they actually believe. But those people actually have the guts to stand up and to go and protest for whatever the twisted psychotic reasons are. That's what the church believes, ladies and gentlemen. That's what Christianity believes. Exactly what the Westboro Baptist Church from Kansas is vilified in our society. That's where most of Christianity is. That's where Christianity is, period. It's not where most of the people are, but it's where Christianity is exactly.
Yep.
How about that? Yep.
God hates bags and God hates shrimp. So.
Mike, thanks so much for calling, brother.
Yes, Mike.
Good to talk to y'all.
Always.
All right, stay
love
in touch,
you.
All right?
We'll do. See ya.
Keep us posted.
Okay, bye.
All right. All right, there's Mike Cole from Daytona. We're over time, but we've got a couple emails we got to get to. This is from Jackie Bernard, our poet laureate. He writes, "What a remarkable comment that we do not live in the memories." By the way, this subject of the email was, "Thank you, Billy." How delightful and enlightening, deep and sweet. This simple comment is so powerful. So many of us have at times been impaired in everyday life by the shackles of memories, be they good or bad memories. God has given to mankind the gift of memory, but I don't believe he intended for memories of the past to rob us of our present and future deliverances. Anything that impedes cannot be of the gospel, because it was for freedom that we have been made free.
Excellent.
Wow. You got to go back and listen to that one again. that's going on the website, Jackie. And we just got this email from Billy. She said, "You are right. It is the strength of the gospel. It's doing it by leaps and bounds lately. Mike, everything you are saying is so true." Billy
wow.
Thompson from Wachuca City, Arizona. And just a couple of months ago, I didn't even know how to pronounce Wachuca City. See, I learned too, folks. We all learn. Michael, I love you.
Love you too, Glenn, so much. And
take care
all
of yourself.
Guys, we never can express the degree of love, but I think that in this little webcast that we had here this evening, and pardon me for my froggy voice, and I've muted myself as much as I could during my coughs. I wouldn't have missed it for the world, though. Billy, thank you a million times over. You just don't know when a thread of truth that is a part of this great gospel revolution that no one has ever expressed yet is going to come out over the airwaves. And it doesn't have to be from me or Glenn. Here tonight, we have learned so much. I learned about part of my experience by Billy's comment. What a profound statement. And everybody's participation has been greatly appreciated. We love you so very much.
Yeah, and it's just really powerful that that for me, I'm just speaking for me, but it's really powerful that that insight came from Arizona tonight,
yeah.
As the United States and much of the world gathered via satellite television to Arizona to hear a different kind of answer. And I'll take Billy Thompson's words every time. Those were so powerful and so revelatory, and then Jackie Bernard's response, and Mike Kolb's call from Daytona Beach. What a fantastic hour and 15 minutes we've had. Thanks, Michael. Go get some tea or honey or something. Inhale. Do some.
Thanks, Glenn.
Good night now.
Good night.
All right. We also want to thank Jeff Robertson for everything that he is doing in the new home offices of the Gospel Revolution. Go to the website at gospelrevolution.com for the new home office phone number, and the website has been refreshed. Also, a reminder that Michael's going to Calgary at the end of the month, January 28th, 29th, and 30th at the Carriage House. For all you beautiful humans in and around the Calgary, Alberta area, get over there to see Michael at the Carriage House for the Grace Conference. And all the information is right on the homepage at gospelrevolution.com. Major thanks to Sean O'Halloran for producing and engineering and call screening. He is the man, and you are the men, and you are the women of the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to you. Until next time, this is Glenn Klein online saying, Shalom, everybody.